One of the strangest, perhaps, SEO tactics is to actually really work on the opening of your blog posts and keep people there longer.
Welcome to the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am talking to the awesome Stephanie Fateni. I can't believe we've made it to episode 40, but today we are talking about everything on-page SEO. Strap yourself in. This is a great episode. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. And today you're joining a conversation between me, Pete Everett, and my wonderful guest for the day, Stephanie Fateni. Good morning, Stephanie. How is it? Oh, it's probably good afternoon where you are, actually. How are you doing anyway?
Yes, it's afternoon. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
That's no problem. Thank you very much for spending the time to share it with us. Stephanie and I have connected online and we've had a chat or two in the past. Stephanie is a consultant, an online consultant, strategist, etc. So before I sort of get it all wrong with what you do, Stephanie, do you want to give yourself a bit of an intro?
Sure, thanks. Right, so most of my work is actually blog coaching. So I help people get their blog posts in the first page of Google. Of course, they're not just bloggers. They're also podcasters and, marketers that are trying to promote themselves, as sort of consultants and that sort of thing. So it's basically people who want to get more traffic to their own website by sharing their expertise. Mm. And I do this by, either coach them, teach them how to do it themselves, or else, I also do take on some accounts as outsourced. So I still do the done for you, because when it comes to Google, it's really important to know what they're up to. So you need to kind of stay in the game.
Mm. Sorry, that was my coffee machine beeping in the background. That's great. I know from the previous conversations we've had, I know that you do take on clients. And I think from somebody that's working in a sort of an SEO capacity, I know you didn't specifically say SEO there, but from an SEO capacity, anybody that's got to be involved with the Google algorithm, it's really good to keep your hands dirty, isn't it? And keep active in doing it, as well as teaching the theory to others.
Yes, it's very important, because you can hear in the Google News for the Google blog, and they'll tell you there's been this minor change and this new algorithm release and all that, but you don't know what that really translates into, and you don't know how to actually use that unless you test. You're always ahead of the game if you start running experiments right away.
And I know we last time we spoke, we had a bit of a laugh about experimenting with real client accounts. but it's true that if you've been working with people for a period of time and you've built up that trust relationship, that actually you can say to them, look, we're going to do all the stuff that we normally do, but actually Google's releasing these features and we're not 100% sure how it's going to work. So can we do this over and above on your account to get some data back for ourselves? And that often works quite well. And I know that's something that you do as well.
Yes, that's something we've done before. And, sometimes, especially when it's going to be obvious, you're going to see it a lot. Like, we had a client who said, we're just going to post like a daily post for 15 days on top of what we've been doing. So, of course, you're going to tell the client and say, we're going to see how this works out, but it's going to be on top of what we're normally doing. And we know it's not going to have a negative effect. It could, however, have a very good positive effect, which in this case it had. So, clients are usually happy to help.
Yeah. And getting them involved in the process, I guess, also makes them feel a little bit more connected into what they're doing, and that the money that they are spending with you on a regular basis is actually worth worth that little bit extra. It's giving them that bit of added value, isn't it?
Yes, I think clients actually love that. When clients see that you experiment, they think, they really know what's happening now, and they're really, a step ahead of everybody else. So I think it does really help your reputation in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. I'd fully agree with that. So when we spoke beforehand, we talked about doing an episode that was Basically covering some of the basics of SEO. And we're really talking on the page SEO here, aren't we, rather than off the page stuff?
Yes. The kind of SEO I deal with mostly is usually related to the structure of the website, the content, you know, the non-techie people and the non-PR people tend to do this kind of PR. So if you're writing, if you're creating a website, you know, maybe if you're just editing somebody else's website, like, you know, maybe it's already there, but, you know, you're going to create menus and sort out the navigation. So these are all things that can affect SEO. And what I try to do is I try to teach my clients how to get to the first page of Google without, you know, changing the platform they're working with and without having to invest a lot of money in monthly search engine optimization by a professional, which usually involves offsite optimization, you know, all the backlinks and posting and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, and but I know from reading some of the materials that you've put together on your website that you do also include social media in that as well, though, don't you? So they're basically the platforms that your clients have control over, rather than the extra stuff that some of these, you know, an SEO agency may go and do.
Yes, and social media is a very important part of SEO today, because Google does pick up your social media signals. And, you know, if you're giving Google all the wrong signals, maybe by using, you know, very different keywords to the ones you use on your site, then that's going to be a disadvantage. So, yes, social media is a big part of it these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So if we just let's go back to the bare bones a little bit then. So, you know, obviously we're not talking necessarily about building a new website from scratch. We've already got a website in place, so we've got, you know, a homepage, a few maybe content pages about our services, about the company or about the individual, and then a blog with, I don't know, three or four posts in it and a contact page, and that's kind of the bare bones of a website these days, isn't it?
Yes.
So where do we start? What's the first point that we can pick up to you know, to start thinking about our on-site SEO?
Excellent. So the first thing you need to do before you pick up anything is to have a good look at the kind of people you want on your website. So the first thing I would do is, you know, if you have clients, get in touch with clients, you know, if they are your clients' clients. I actually have like a set of questions that I send to my clients, and they ask these questions to their own clients so that we can get feedback directly from the person that has bought the service. And, you know, they are the kind of people we want more of on our website. Mm. This is very important because we need to know how they speak about their struggles and how they speak about the problems that you resolve. Because this is going to become key, because obviously then the next stage is to go to keyword research.
Mm-hmm.
So before we begin anything, we need to find out, you know, what keywords your ideal clients are already looking for in Google. And, you know, you don't need really complex tools for this. You can use very simple online tools like UberSuggest from Neil Patel.
Yep.
It's a very good tool. It also gives you keyword suggestions and it gives you traffic. It lets you know if there are people paying pay-per-click for this. So it really helps you choose the best keywords. A lot of people just agonize over the choice of their keyword tool. You don't need to, because they all more or less give you the same results. They're just organized in a different way.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. The other thing that just to sort of interject for a second, the other thing we always advise our clients to do is to look at some of the pay-per-click data that comes through as well. I mean, don't go overboard with it. But when you're looking at the data, even if you're not planning on running any paid advertising on it, it does give you the information as to how much people, you know, a ballpark as to how much people are paying for those keywords. So volume and pure monthly search sometimes isn't the be all and end all when it comes to keyword research. It's looking at, you do need search terms that have volume behind them, but you also need ones that have a conversion rate behind them, and you can get a feel of what that conversion rate's like based on the amount of money that people are paying.
Indeed, that's a very good way to describe it. It's that amount of money that people are spending is going to give you a very good indication of how it converts.
Yeah.
And if you are you only have about 4 blog posts on your website, you would probably need to begin from low competition keywords. Mm-hmm. And you know, I am not averse to keywords that don't have masses of traffic, as long as, you know, you can see that it's the kind of keyword that purchase-ready people would type in.
Yes, because yes, I understand that. And actually, the low volume, it also depends on the keyword as well a little bit, doesn't it? You know, if you're getting a very generic term that's got a very low search volume, then actually that probably indicates that's not a great term. Whereas if you're starting to get longer tail keywords, and maybe we'll just define mm-hmm. what those are in a minute, that longer tail keywords naturally have lower search volume but normally have a higher conversion rate. So the average monthly search volume isn't always the best statistic to purely go by. You've got to take a flavor of how this keyword acts and how it behaves throughout all the different pieces of information that you can get for it.
Indeed, absolutely, Pete. And what I like to do is I like to organize the main keywords, which I call category keywords. So let's say you have a main keyword, which is marketing consultant. Mm-hmm. Then you would go into the long tail keywords, which could be, I don't know, marketing consultant for dentists, or social media marketing consultant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you keep breaking down until you find the ones that are relevant to you and, of course, you know, have traffic and ideally also, like you said, a pay-per-click index. So at that stage, then, the way I organize the site is you need to choose at least 2 or 3 of these keyword categories and ideally put them in your main menu. Now, it can be quite difficult to do that if you haven't planned your site around it. But usually, if you go back to the drawing board, you can at least include 1 or 2 of these keywords in your main menu. And what this does is it makes it very clear to Google what your main keyword categories are. Now, you're not going to rank for them with 4 blog posts. You're probably not going to rank for them even with 40 blog posts. But in the long term, when you have created enough content for that category, you will stand a chance of really ranking for the very, very high volume keywords. Mm. And that can be very, very valuable for your business.
Absolutely. And now there's another key point, really, that you're touching on here, which is that when Google looks at your website, it doesn't only see content on a page for a keyword. It's getting its data, or it's getting a lot of its data through the way users behave on your website. So even if you've got somebody that's coming in from a blog that's maybe unrelated to one of your keywords, if you've then got those keywords in your main navigation and people then click on them and spend more time on the pages that are to do with your category keywords, as you call them, your top level keywords, versus wherever they came in from, you can actually see that there is an element of the Google algorithm which will give you a benefit for people spending time on those pages anyway. So you need to make those pages as accessible as they can be if somebody's on your website, regardless of how they came in.
Indeed. And in fact, I think that's something called what the SEO experts call pogo sticking. Yep. Where, you know, if people land on your page and they go straight back to Google, then you're not going to last even if you did make it to the first page.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So the statistic that drives that kind of data is called a bounce rate, isn't it? So that's when somebody comes into your website and then leaves without visiting any other page. So if you can, if you're running ads to a landing page where you're wanting people to convert into a funnel, you want to remove all the distractions about navigating away. Whereas if you're actually driving organic traffic to a website, it's actually beneficial for those users to have somewhere else to go, because that's going to reduce your bounce rate, improve your time on site, time on page, and therefore increase your SEO rankings. By osmosis. It's not quite like that, but you know, through the Google algorithm.
Indeed, indeed. And in fact, one of the things that I work with my clients, the ones that go for the writing side of things, one of the strangest perhaps SEO tactics is to actually really work on the opening of your blog posts and keep people there longer. Because, you know, catching people in the beginning is really important because it also has an effect on your bounce rate.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And that then comes into a whole area of copywriting, which we may get onto in a minute. So we've looked at our target audience, we've identified some keywords, we've put some of them in the menu and restructured maybe the way the site works a little bit. Where do we go next?
Well, the next thing would be to collect all your content based on, you know, the categories. So you need to rearrange it in the right place so that Google understands how important each category is for you. Mm-hmm. So, of course, with 4 blog posts, you don't really have much to to sort out.
Okay, well, this process may have taken a couple of weeks now. We might have 10 or 12 blog posts by now.
Indeed, yes, okay. But, you know, you also need to understand how much volume you're going to have. So each category should ideally not have more than 50 blog posts max, because then what tends to happen is that you start diluting your own keywords. Mm-hmm. So you start getting a situation where you have too much content about the same topic, and it kind of looks a bit like old-fashioned keyword stuffing, but it's kind of page stuffing. And
that's an interesting point, that actually. Yeah, that is a very interesting point.
Yeah, I've seen websites go a little bit overboard with this. And what happens is that Google actually refuses to index you.
Wow. I've not come across that myself. But, you know, that I do see, now you've put it that way, I do see the way the mentality works behind it.
Yes, of course, because Google would think, yeah, like, okay, marketing consultant is a keyword category that is relevant to you, but you've already got 50 blog posts. Some of them are ranking quite well. We don't need to index any more of these. It's just more of the same.
Yeah, yeah. And I think where people's misconception of Google often comes from is Google's primary function is to make money. It makes money by delivering advertising at the top and at the bottom of its search results. But in order to maximize the amount that it can charge for those ads, it needs to provide the highest quality organic results in the middle, because it's, you know, it's only by having high quality organic results that it can start to charge a premium for the ads. So you're dead right. By having hundreds of blogs all on the same topic, Google is never going to give you all 10 organic results, because that's just going to dilute the amount that it can pay for, it can charge for the ads, that for the people that are paying for those ads on that same page. So you're right, it needs to keep a fresh mix of what that content is in the organic results.
Indeed. And I think also from the human side, you know, the algorithm is getting smarter and smarter. And what tends to happen is that as you write more and more content, usually trying really hard to rank for that particular topic, the quality tends to be diluted and the quality tends to get worse, because you have already written so much stuff that you're either repeating yourself or you're just, you know, just going through the motions.
Mm. Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. That's a really good point. So once you've got your keywords, you've recategorized the content that's in there. When we're doing this through our agency, we call this process keyword mapping, and we basically have an Excel sheet, and we list all of the pages that are on the website in the Excel sheet, and we can then map the keywords that we want to rank for. We can then map those against the pages that we've already got, and if we've not got a page that's appropriate, then we know we need to create a new page or blog or whatever it might be in order to give that keyword a home. So the very first thing from our process is to make sure that all of the keywords we want to rank for have at least one page or blog post or whatever it might be on the website that's applicable to it. And then we can start to build in a strategy of how we create more content around those keywords. And that could be extra blog posts, or it could be, I don't know, if it's products, you know, the product pages that sit underneath the category or whatever it could be. So I know you're more from the content side. So I'm assuming then once you've got that, you're then looking at a a content plan or a content strategy to put together a number of blogs to surround the sort of side topics to do with. So if we are looking at marketing consultant, we can then pick off what the side topics are that are around that, which might be, you know, becoming a marketing consultant or how marketing consultants help businesses or those kind of things.
Yes. So indeed, just like you said, you know, we would actually, the next step would be to have a good list of your keywords and see if you can map any to the content you already have. If you can map it out, you would, of course, go in and edit the copy and optimize that particular blog post for the keywords you've chosen. What we then do is I would break it down into at least three phases. So, mm-hmm. I would look at the content that is sort of in the beginning of the funnel.
Yep.
You know, where people still need a lot of education about what they would need to buy. They're still learning about it. And then the second phase would be the consideration stage. So, you know, where they're considering different options, what to buy. Of course, this is where within your content, you position yourself as one of the better options. And yep. then there would be the purchase ready, the narrow side of the funnel. So I like to subdivide the content into these three phases mm-hmm. so that then we can just map a freebie to each.
Okay.
So that, of course, then we can also test if we are attracting the right clients by understanding how many of them are downloading the freebie.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So, and by that, when you say downloading a freebie, that could be a white paper, a PDF, it could be some kind of takeaway, a download. Funnily enough, I actually have a download on my website, peteeverett.com, which mm-hmm. is a keyword mapping template. So it's, you know, that is an Excel file. And people, when you're giving away your freebies, people normally do this by email. So you're also using this as a means to build an email list.
Indeed, yes. Build an email list. And if you're, you know, planning to still be in business 10 years from now, you also need to build your followers and Facebook messenger list, because millennials and younger people are not using much email these days.
No, they're not.
And that's
not
a worry for every marketer, I think. Because it's such a big change for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where the whole discussion about, you know, whether messenger bots and those kind of things that can start to trigger conversations in Messenger, particularly Facebook Messenger, are a good thing for marketers to be aware of and to get skilled up in, or whether that's more of a techie thing that technology companies sort of just generating to create more spammy content, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm purposefully being provocative in the way that I say that.
Well, you can use bots very much like you use email, in the same way, in the sense you can be very spammy with email, mm-hmm. but you can choose not to be. Bots are the same, you know. You can choose to really automate a lot of stuff, but you can also choose not to. You can just do broadcasts like you would do your email mail shot, and, you know, be very personal and personalize it.
Yeah, that's really good. I've got I completely see where you're coming from. I've got to admit, messenger bots or that whole messenger marketing, it's something I've been aware of for a few months now, but it's not an area I've particularly explored. So have you particularly worked on that side of things with clients in the past?
Yes, I've used bots quite a lot. You know, since in the agency, we've also done the social media side. You always hit a point, especially when you have e-commerce sites and you're building search engine traffic. You come to a stage where there's bottleneck, basically.
Yep.
And you do need to automate, because what people will do very often is they will get in touch with you with any means possible, and, you know, they overwhelm your customer service. So an easy way to redirect the customer service bottleneck is to redirect people to have a thing on your website that takes them to your Facebook page messenger. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can have automated questions. So you just ask people when they send you a message, whether they're just looking for a quote or whether they need to speak to someone. And if they're trying to speak to someone, you can just ask for their phone number and call them back. Mm-hmm. If they're not, you can just redirect them to a kind of digital wizard, and they can get their own quotes.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's the kind of thing I've done. And it can be very effective at relieving a company that is growing faster than it can manage.
Absolutely. You know, there's well, they always say there's two ways to make money, isn't there? One is to turn over more, and the other is to spend less. And you're essentially applying the same theory, but just to time. There's two ways to get more done. You either get more people to do it, or you do less yourself. And that's where, if you can get automations in place like that that are gonna save you time and save you effort, then yeah, they're definitely worth it. Absolutely.
Indeed. And what I find is that clients want the extra work, but they're not really ready for short-term growth, because they're going to, let's say you have a product that closes, you know, they can close it in maybe 3 to 4 weeks. Hmm. They're not going to employ right away. They're going to wait 4 to 8 weeks to know how that traffic is converting and how these people that are asking quotes, you know, how much money is it turning into, because they're not going to take the risk of just employing right away.
Yep.
So you do have to kind of help them out in the meantime. Otherwise, you break the system.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there's moving this back to the SEO side of things, there's also a key point there as well, which is to do with, you know, if you make a change on your website today, Google isn't going to react to that instantly. So the whole thing with SEO is it's not SEO is a long-term game in terms of organic SEO is a long-term game, but the actually optimizing your website isn't something that you can do overnight. It is a process that is going to take weeks to months in order to do it, depending on how long or how much you've got to start with and how much content needs creating as part of the plan.
In fact, and once you have set up your website, you need to have a content plan to keep it regular, keep optimizing, and also keep checking back, because it's the way you optimize in the long term that really gives you the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is quite a simplistic way of putting it. The way we explain it to clients in our agency is Google doesn't look at your website every day. Now, technically, that's not true. Google does look at some pages of your website probably every day. But Google doesn't, you know, the Google bot's job is to start at page one of the internet, go through to page 17.5 billion, and then go back to page one again and start again. And that process takes around about 3-ish weeks, between 2.5 and 3 weeks. So as Google, the way we explain it to our clients is that as Google looks at your website and it sees your web page, it takes a snapshot of that web page. And that's not the way it looks to you. That's the way the code looks and the information structure and all of the schema tags and all this SEO stuff that's in the background. When it revisits that page 3 weeks later, if that snapshot hasn't updated, then it doesn't update the time and date stamp which it took when it originally took the snapshot. So you essentially are that piece of content then becomes one cycle old. Now, if you go through one cycle or two cycles or even three or four cycles and that timestamp doesn't get updated, it's not the end of the world. But if you're starting to get 6, 8, 10 cycles and your content on your key landing pages, so the key top level terms that you want to be ranked for, if they still have the old timestamp, the original timestamp, all of a sudden the age of that content is going to start to work against you. So having dynamic features, having news feeds on your homepage, making sure that you're keeping the category content regular and fresh, they're all actually helping you with your SEO simply because it's keeping your website up to date and showing Google that this is an active website. Would you agree with that? That's the way we explain it to our clients. So I'd just be interested to see how somebody else who knows what they're talking about reacts to that kind of description.
Yes, absolutely. You know, if you're not very strong in terms of the technical SEO, we actually recommend that you blog at least twice a week to keep the bots coming back, and so that they can see that your site is very active. I work with a lot of SEO experts. I even do some writing for an SEO company. I've got very good relationships with them, of course, because they need content.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, what I find is that a lot of them will tell you that the content doesn't need to be very long, but you need to at least have two signals a month. So, you know, I usually recommend to clients to either go short and frequent, or to maybe, if they cannot blog so often, maybe go for two long posts once a month, because that mm-hmm. way you're giving the bot something to come and see. And of course, you then interlink it with other pages maybe the bot hasn't found yet. So you're giving them, you know, like a different windows into the same place. But if it doesn't detect the change, the bot won't visit you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another reason why it's also good to keep abreast of all of the content that you've got on your website, because, you know, as this fictional example started, you had four or five blogs on the website to begin with. When you've then created 30 blogs, you may be able to go and put links in those original five to some of the newer content that you've since created. So, you know, you can always go back and re-edit a piece of content and add links in, or maybe restructure a paragraph so that it works slightly differently, or whatever it might be. In order to help support the new content that you're generating as time goes on.
Indeed. And, you know, one of the things that I find can be very effective, you know, sometimes you have long tail keywords that are perhaps very important to your website, but, you know, they're kind of two levels down and they're kind of buried in the content. So, you know, the more links you have to these, and also, you know, sometimes you can add them as links in the footer to help Google find them, because the footer is going to go in every page. So it's a little bit of a cheat to make sure that the bot finds the main pages you want to rank.
Absolutely. Now, I'd always err on a side of caution with that, to say mm-hmm. that's a good technique if you're creating a new page that you want the bots to find. But once that page is ingrained within your sort of your content hierarchy and Google knows it's there and it's ranked quite well, it's often best to then start removing those links out of the footer so that you don't end up with, can you remember sort of 10-15 years ago where the way to get pages ranked was to have links in the footer, and you'd have footers that were just jammed full of links, you know, you'd have 50 links that you'd probably set to white on a white background so that they didn't actually appear, but Google would see them. I never did that, by the way.
I hated that visually. It's just, you know, I started off as a web designer in Flash, where you could do anything you want. You know, you started off with a blank page.
Yeah.
So when I see websites that are, you know, full of links, it jars with me. It's not very human friendly, I think.
No, absolutely. We often have a sort of menu in the footer that's called key pages or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be the place where we may drop some of this new content in, and then, you know, it may stay there for, I don't know, a few months, but that's probably one of the places of the website or one of the menus of the website that we actually change quite regularly, because we're trying to put in the new stuff as we're generating it, which means we often take out some of the older stuff that we know that Google's already picked up.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
So, okay. Oh, well, I'm pleased I managed to give something back, because you've given lots of value in this episode so far. So
I have a question for you, in fact, Pete.
Oh, go for it.
How old is old for a footer link?
Oh, you know, it depends. I think it sort of depends on the content that you're trying to include. So if you're linking a blog post, for example, then the age of that blog post, or the age of that link, is going to be less, because unless it's a truly evergreen piece of content, you know, the problem you've got if you're writing for SEO, for example, is SEO, the SEO scene changes so quickly that even evergreen, in inverted commas, content can still have a lifespan.
Yes.
So we'd normally review them, review links that are in the footer based on what they're linking to. If it is, if the menu's called, you know, key pages or key insights from XYZ, then we'd pages that are links that are actually linking to category pages, top level pages, may stay in that menu for a longer period of time than links that are linking to blogs and slightly more temporary content. But the advantage of having a menu like that is that you can mix all of this content together. So as kind of a menu with a vague title, you can put in a good mix of the things that you're trying to rank for. And look, some of the content we put on a page isn't really there for the reader. It's really there for Google. And we, I'd class those menus as really there for that purpose rather than for actually helping the user navigate the site. Does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah, it does. It does. It's very interesting.
So we've obviously talked about quite a lot of stuff here to do with to do with the strategy of it. So we've then got our content plan in place. We've highlighted the terms that we're wanting to rank for. We've broken those down into something between twice a week, shorter pieces of content, or maybe slightly less frequently than that, but longer pieces of content. We're then writing this stuff. What are sort of the key checkpoints that you look for when you're actually writing a piece of content to help it be optimized?
Well, the most important thing to optimize it for Google and for people is to have subtitles. Unfortunately, most of the people that visit your blog are not going to read all of it. So, but research actually shows that even writers skim. So the people who do read your blog and the ones that just go in there to see if it's good stuff and they want to follow it, they're both going to read your subtitles. So that's very important. Now, they need to have your keyword, but only the first ones, you know. So if you use the keyword in your first one or two subtitles, that really helps. It's not very natural to use it towards the end of your article because, you know, it's a bit like when you're talking, you know, when you start talking about a topic, like, you know, you would use the full keyword, for instance, marketing consultant. But as you go further into the conversation, you're more likely to use the word consultant as opposed to keep mentioning marketing consultants. So, you know, Google picks up on these things. It knows how language works naturally. So towards the end of the post, definitely, you know, it's the best place to have a call to action or a link to the next thing, but not the keyword. So definitely that is probably the most important thing, the subtitles. The one you mentioned before, of course, you've got to be careful what words you link up. Because anything that is linked or in bold, you know, Google is going to pick that up as important for that particular post.
Yeah.
So, you know, you need to be careful as to what other articles you connect it to and, you know, which keywords you connect it. Because let's say your article is about a marketing consultant, let's say. I can't come up with a clear example, but let me just think about it for a second. Let's say it's marketing, consulting, and blogging, for instance. Now, how is Google going to find out whether this page is optimized for marketing consultant or for blogging or for the full keyword kind of thing? Yeah. So the way you would do that is, you know, when you're linking your links, you don't want to link to both marketing consultant and blogging because it's going to sort of confuse Google and it's going to think that they are both just as important. So if you've chosen marketing consultant as your keyword, then it's important that you optimize everything else to give those two words more importance than other perhaps similar keywords on the page.
Yeah. Yep, no, that makes perfect sense. The other thing that you need to be really careful of when you're doing your links is that you actually put the link on the keyword itself or on the link includes the keyword itself, and don't put the link on, you know, please see this article for marketing consultants, click here. Do not put the link on click here, because all you're doing is setting the anchor text of click here for every link on your website, and you're absolutely obliterating any SEO benefit that you're going to get from that link.
Indeed, and that is such a common faux pas. A lot of people do it. You know, I started off in SEO. My background was actually building websites and teaching teachers how to build websites for people with special needs. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing more confusing to a blind person when their bot, you know, the bots that read the pages and turn it into speech. There's nothing more confusing than just a link that says click here.
Yeah, no,
because
absolutely.
They don't know where they're going to go. So, you know, it's when you think about it, it just makes so much sense. How is Google going to know where you're going, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've thank you. Thank you for spending the time doing that, because I know it's, you know, talking about the basics of SEO can feel a little bit like, you know, pulling teeth, but it's, and I know we haven't mentioned things to do with images and alt tags and you know, videos on page and all of that kind of stuff. But actually, if anybody listening to this is starting with a website and, you know, they need to start looking at how that website's ranking in Google, everything that you've talked about so far is really the best place to begin. And then, you know, SEO is an ongoing project, and then you can worry about optimizing images and this, that, and the other. But if you're starting with a website where very little SEO work's been done at all, then really the last 30 minutes or so has been an absolutely fantastic overview as to where to start. As we come into land a bit now, Stephanie, so the sort of final thing I wanted to ask you is, when you've done all this really great work on your website, how do you then start, or where's the best places to look, what are the best tools to use to actually monitor the progress that you're making so that you can see the positive effect that these things are happening?
Well, there are two tools that I love to use. I don't like to use a lot of tools because I think a lot of data is going to mislead you and give you false happy dance moments that doesn't turn into money, basically. But there's definitely the Google Search Console. That's very important. It shows you where your blog, what queries you're ranking for and where your blog posts are ranking. And, you know, it can give you a very, that's all the information you need. It's a very clear picture.
Yeah.
I think analytics can be a bit overkill if you're just starting. You know, Google Analytics is a little bit much if you've just started out. So you want to know how you're ranking for a particular query, which page is ranking for it. And then you want to track from your end where the traffic is coming from on your website and how many people are downloading your freebies, and how many of those people who download it are turning into clients, because people forget to close the loop. And I think that's one of the reasons why people think SEO is expensive, because if you are closing the loop, you know exactly how much money you're putting in and how much money you're taking out.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. So that's actually the new layer. I'm about 5 or 6 months ago, they changed the layout of Google Search Console that used to be called Google Webmaster Tools.
Indeed.
And they've now got these great performance graphs, haven't they, where you can actually see the number of impressions that you have, which is the number of times you've appeared on somebody's screen for a search result, and the number of clicks that have come through, and which pages they are, and which terms that, you know, they were that you ranked for. So there's a really good graphical representation, which, if you get the line going in the right direction, gives you a very good indication that all of this hard work that you've put in has been worth it.
Indeed. And in fact, you know, you mentioned the impressions. Those are very important, because if you can see that you're ranking on the first page, but people haven't clicked on your link, then your blog post is not the problem. It's probably the way you've optimized, the way it's showing up. So there are, I think it's enough as a tool. A little bit further down the line, I also like to use Hotjar.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you're aware of it. It actually gives you like these visuals, it shows you the hotspots of where people are clicking, and it gives you an actual recording. So you can tell it to record the next 100 visits to your website, and it will actually show you where people are clicking and how they are behaving. Mm-hmm. Of course, this will help you with the human side, because you might realize that you're getting the traffic to your site, but people are not downloading your freebie, not because it's not good, but because maybe you have another element that in terms of design is competing with your opt-in box.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I find is that it helps you tackle the human side And then, you know, the Google console helps you tackle the bot side. And I think if you're starting out, that's far more than enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on. Oh, we do use... we use both of those tools. We use Hotjar. I'll make sure there's links to both Google Search Console and Hotjar in the show notes. So thank you so much, Stephanie, for your time and that breakdown. That was brilliant. If anybody's got any questions or they want to reach out to you directly, what's the best way that people can get in touch with you?
Well, they can find me on my site at stephaniefiteni.com. There's a new one launching soon.
There'll be a link to that in the show notes.
Yes, and you know my handles on Twitter and Facebook, as well as LinkedIn, you can find me easily under Stephanie Fiteni. So fortunately, it's not such a common name. So
I know, yeah,
so that's easy to find.
You're not a John Smith, are you? So yeah, that's great. Well, I'll find a few of those links and I'll drop those in the show notes as well, so that people can find you and come and join us in our group, at peteeverett.com/group. It'll send you onto a Facebook community. So you know, Stephanie may be in there by the time this episode airs. In which case, you know, feel free to give her a shout out in there as well. Thank you so much for your time. I know I've said that about 3 times now, but it has been really valuable. And it's, you know, these are things I've been mentioning, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring Stephanie on to talk about this in particular was that my voice is quite a blunt sort of male British kind of way of looking at things, and actually to have a woman in this industry, which isn't always all that common, to come and talk about this, I thought would be a really great thing to do. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure, and I'll definitely see you in the group.
Fantastic. See you soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Stephanie, thanks so much for such practical advice. Everybody will have been able to get something out of that one. For those of you that have been asking, the Demystifying SEO course from the Marketing Development Academy is currently underway and will be going back on sale in April this year. There's a wait list available at marketingdevelopment.academy. Make sure you sign up to be one of the first notified when the course reopens for enrollment. Otherwise, come and join us over in our Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group, or just search Facebook for the Marketing Development Academy. And show notes for this episode can be found at peteeverett.com/040, where there's links to all of Stephanie's profiles and coverage of the main talking points that we've covered in this episode. Until next week, we'll see you next time.